And behold, there was a man before him who had dropsy. And Jesus responded to the lawyers and Pharisees, saying, Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath or not? But they remained silent. Then he took him and healed him and sent him away. And he said to them, Which of you, having a son or an ox that has fallen into a well on a Sabbath day, will not immediately pull him out? And they could not reply to these things. What is religion? Some might say, the worship or service of God. Or others might say, any system of faith in a God, in an object of worship. And whatever definition you may prefer, a system of faith will always imply law. Religion, or the worship of God, if you accept this definition, let us play this game for the second now. Religion does speak of God and the way things are. And because it does so, because it tells us about the way things are, ultimate reality, if you will, religion always comes with that measure of restraint that translates into acceptable and unacceptable behavior. And for this reason, the bond of faith and law, or the bond of religion and law, can never be completely severed, although there has been no shortage of attempts to do just that. In reality, or let me say in practice, my religion, your faith, anyone's religion, is tested not by your words, but by your actions, by the life that it produces. Now, I may affirm that I know God, but if my behavior or my life generally points in a different direction, then I cannot claim I know God. Amos was an Old Testament prophet, 8th century prophet, and he saw the inconsistencies of his contemporaries. He would come to them and say, I know that you gather to bring oblations and sacrifices and to worship God in Gilgal, in Beersheba, what are some of the other places of worship that were current at the time? Gilgal, Beersheba, and there was, of course, a Bethel. And you do these things. You bring sacrifices to God, but in your palaces, in the houses of the rich, or those who wield power, decisions are being made that bring the poor and the underprivileged under the wheel. And in the courtrooms, I see judges who favor the cause of the powerful and the rich because they can afford to bribe you. Hundreds of years later, John the Apostle put it this way. 1 John 4:20. If anyone says, I love God, and yet hates his brother, he is a liar. Because he who does not love his brother whom he has seen, how can he love God whom he has not seen? And this commandment we have received from him, that he who loves God, and here it comes, must also love his brother. So, the question, is it lawful? as posed by Jesus in this particular setting, is integral to faith and religion. You can't get around it. If ever you try, you can't get around it completely. The bond of faith and law can never be severed completely. And yet, this isn't a text that is intended to tell you what is lawful or what is not lawful to do on a particular day. Jesus moves beyond the concern of staying within the limits of legal constraints or legal demands or avoiding transgression of such to what is in keeping with the spirit of the law. And the spirit of the lawgiver. What is the purpose of God in giving us law, or his word more generally speaking? And what does it say about him? What does it reveal about his character? If the end of religion, and it is so, if the end of religion is conformity to the God whom we worship, so that whatever God you worship, you will always end up becoming like him, and this is a true principle because God has made it so, then conformity to God is the end of our religion, of our faith. To become like him, be ye holy, for I am holy. It has always been that way, and it will always be that way. What is the purpose of God in giving us law? And what does it reveal about him? What Jesus did on Sabbaths, such as is recorded in this text, Jesus' signs, his miraculous signs on the Sabbath, they were acted commentaries on the purpose of God. Not only in giving us the law, but the purpose of God in more general terms. They were acted commentaries on God's purpose, which in turn bespoke his character. What is God like after all? When Jesus performed healing miracles on the Sabbath day, it was intended to reveal the character of God above all else. And so also was this one. And the Pharisees, in particular the host of this dinner occasion, a notable individual in the community, no doubt about that, but the Pharisees and the experts in the law, called the lawyers, as there was no distinction between religious and civil law in Israel at that time. These religious luminaries did not know God and did not know his purpose. But, as Luke said, as early as 7:30, and it is, to some degree, a very rough category, because it wasn't true for all Pharisees, and I would have you know or remember that Luke, in particular, is the one evangelist who makes that very plain, that not all Pharisees were corrupt. But he did say, as early as 7:30, that the Pharisees and the lawyers had rejected the purpose of God for themselves. That is to say, they had had ample opportunity to test the words and the works of Christ and then came to the conclusion, yes, but after all, this isn't for me. I cannot buy into this program, not into this man, and I won't. They rejected the purpose of God for themselves. Now, we want to be fair. The Pharisees were devoutly committed to keeping the law, even in the minutest detail. They did have this desire to be true to the law of God and to avoid breaking it. The Sabbath, they held, was a special gift of Yahweh. And observance of the Sabbath required careful preparation. And so they hedged in the Sabbath with a multitude of commandments or stipulations that told people what is lawful and what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath. The Mishnah is the oldest written document of rabbinic Judaism. The collection of sayings in the Mishnah date from 70, that is the year of the destruction of Jerusalem, 70 AD to 200. However, the multitude of most of these traditions recorded in the Mishnah antedate the destruction of Jerusalem, and we can be certain of this tradition, that it antedated the destruction of Jerusalem, because even in the days of Jesus, there were those who saw Jesus perform miracles, and they condemned him for it. Why did they do this? Because according to rabbinic tradition, it was unlawful, it was considered not permissible to heal people on the Sabbath unless, this was the exception, it was a case of emergency. Now, this man, who suffered from edema, a pathological accumulation of fluids in the limbs or in the body, Steve can tell you more about this than I can, but this man was not in immediate danger, and therefore they should have left him alone. He could wait for another day to be healed. Remember, we had a similar scenario in chapter 13, verse 14, where once again, on the Sabbath day and in the synagogue, Jesus performed the healing of a stooped woman oppressed by a demon for 18 years. And the ruler of the synagogue, taking note of this miracle, didn't deny that it was a miracle. This is what he said. There are 6 days in which you can do work. Come, yes, come on those 6 days and be healed, but not today. I wish to highlight a few notions at this point. First, consider this. If indeed the Pharisee, the host of this dinner occasion, and his distinguished guests, the experts in the law, if they did believe that Jesus was capable of performing miracles, and they did believe this, we know this because in 14, 1 through 6, we're told that they were watching him. So they knew that he can do these things. If they maintained this, and they did, who was the source of this authority? If they said, well, of course, we know it is God who does these things, who is the source of this power? If it is God, who in the world were they to say, God cannot heal this man on this particular day? This man who is his own creature? On a day that God has institutionalized and invested with special religious and spiritual significance, God can't do that. The follow-up question then would be, who do you think you are? Come again. Who do you think you are that you could stay God's hand? But the dilemma also is present if you argue in the opposite direction, or if they had done so, if they had said, no, we do not believe it is God who works through this man, or if they had said, we don't know. We do not know whether it is God or someone else who does these things through this man. The lay people, they would have condemned them for this. They would have fallen into discredit with the common people because they were always ready to acknowledge God as the source of the power at work in Jesus. They glorified God when they saw Jesus' miracles. And Luke notes this on several occasions. And they would have marveled, why, this is truly remarkable. You are the teachers of Israel and you do not know these things when it is all too evident. But they could have replied that God does not violate his own law. It is unlawful to heal on the Sabbath, therefore God won't do it. Very well, then. We now raise the question, what does the law say about healing or deeds of mercy on the Sabbath? And when we study the law and gather together all that we can know from the law, and its later commentaries in the prophets and in the writings, when we do this, we have to concede that the law did prohibit work in the most general sense on the Sabbath, but it never had anything to say about deeds of mercy or healing. That is, deeds by which our neighbor, not ourselves, but our neighbor benefits. Works by which we procure blessing to our neighbor. The law never said anything against this on the Sabbath. The work that was not to be done on the Sabbath, but that was to be done during 6 days of the week, was work that we also perform in order to make a living for ourselves and for our dependents. But the Sabbath was not a day on which the general command to love mercy, to procure mercy, was suspended. In fact, we would have to say that there was and there is no holiday and no vacation from the command to show mercy. And Jesus' line of reasoning intimates that meeting the needs of fellow human beings, as he does in this account, is not only lawful on the Sabbath, but is in fact the kind of thing that we should be doing or ought to be doing, because it is in keeping with the spirit of the law and the purpose of God. This is why Jesus made a habit, so it seems when you read the Gospels, he made a habit of healing people on Sabbaths. And in the presence of religious people that objected to it, he made a habit of it. Not to offend people, but positively to send out the message, this is the purpose of God. And this is the purpose of God, particularly for the sign of the Sabbath. Now, originally, the Sabbath was not only a sign of the order of creation, that God made the world in 6 days and then rested on the seventh day. And however you interpret the creation account of Genesis 1, I'm not interested in hearing about this at this point. But as far as Genesis 1 is concerned, the pattern 6 plus 1 applies to both God and to the world of man. We are to work 6 days and then rest. But it is not only a sign, and it was not only a sign of the order of creation, it was also a sign of God's redemption. It became a sign of God's deliverance of Israel from the house of bondage. The Sabbath was a sign that God gave to Israel that he had met their most desperate need. Rest from the labor of bondage and slavery. He had met that need, and it was a sign that God sanctified his people. And if this was the true nature of this day, then it would only be logical, if I may say so, but it would only be logical for his people to do the same thing on this day of the Sabbath as one, I'm not saying as the only one, but as one aspect of their worship of God, to meet their neighbor's need. Considering who God was and what he had done for his people. Remember also, and I've said this on several occasions, but I wish to refresh your memory now, that Luke is unique in that he is the only one who records Jesus' inaugural speech in his hometown in Nazareth. At the beginning, at the very beginning of his ministry, we hear of him being in the synagogue on a Sabbath in his hometown among his own people, and he has the honor of reading one of the biblical texts that were to be read, a public reading of the Word of God during a synagogue worship service. And he chose the text of Isaiah 61:1, in which he shows himself to be the anointed servant of God. And he came for what purpose? To deliver the oppressed, to proclaim liberty to those who sit in chains, the prisoner. And then he sums it all up and says, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. As some of you will recall, this year of the Lord's favor is a reference to the Jubilee year, and the Jubilee year was a super Sabbath. The Sabbath of all Sabbaths, because every 50th year, those who had fallen onto hard times or into poverty, who had lost their property, they could return to their homestead. They were to be given the title that they formerly held, and no questions asked. Can you imagine what kind of an economic revolution this caused in Israel every 50th year? And I think that this is also the reason why we have no evidence that the Israelites took it too seriously. We have no evidence that they did these things. It was very costly. It was turning the world upside down. But that's what salvation is in the Gospel of Luke. That is what salvation is. And so now, the weekly Sabbath, the seventh day of the week, the day of worship and the life of Israel, was also delivering the same message that God meets the needs of his people, causing them to return, making them free, making them a people who were no people, calling them out of slavery into the freedom of the service of God. Essentially, the weekly Sabbath proclaimed the same message as the Jubilee, the year of the Lord's favor. And Jesus says, today, this word is fulfilled in your hearing. Today, as you see me, as I speak to you, my friends whom I have known for these many years, today this is fulfilled because I have arrived and I am the servant of Yahweh who has come to deliver you from your burden. Now you perhaps can appreciate why the people wanted to stone him. If I would say these things to you, and granted, you are way ahead of the Israelites in those days, you know far more than they used to. But if I were to come to you and say such words like this, you'd say, Martin has gone crazy, and I would have gone crazy for that alone. Now, that these religious luminaries wanted to keep the sick man in bondage. Keep him in bondage, if only for another day, shows that they did not know God, shows that they had not internalized or accepted the purpose of God, but rejected it. And more than that, it shows that they had failed to worship God acceptably on this day of worship, because they refused to meet the needs of their brother or sister on this day. Now, we do not have such a seventh-day Sabbath anymore. And in the history of the New Testament church, Christians haven't always been able to refrain from working on the first day of the week that we call the Lord's Day, the Christian day of worship. We haven't always been able to do this, and in fact, in other parts of this world, many Christians to this very day are not free to refrain from working. But I think. Our observance of this day today, Sunday, would be revolutionized if we would focus less on what we can or cannot do on this day, but instead focus on what we should be doing. And here, Old and New Testament intersect, harmonize perfectly. Religion or worship never was a matter of pleasing me or meeting my needs. Religion or worship, by definition, centers on the lone object of my worship, and that is God. However, if this is true, and if you accept this, then derivatively, secondarily, and precisely in this order, and precisely with this rating, worship also involves meeting one another's needs. Remember 1 John 4:20, if I say, I love God, but I do not meet the needs of my brother when I know about them, I am a liar. And I would have to confess to all of you, I have been found to be a liar many, many times. And I have only myself to blame. I do have a place to go with this. But I have been found a liar. And God protect me from continuing in lie. And maybe you feel the same way. I would like you to think more specifically now about this question. Is it lawful or is it not? If in worship we celebrate the fact that God met our needs, that God has delivered us from the bondage of slavery to sin and to Satan and the law of God, if He has met our needs and if He has given us rest, ought we not do something similar or the same on this day? So it would lead to the question, is there someone here whose need I can meet? Is there someone here who needs help? Perhaps someone with whom I can pray, or someone whom I can tell, I want you to know that I am praying for you. You know, when we meet only once a week, that doesn't mean I don't think of you. I do think of you. I pray for you. I want you to know this. Or maybe I should make a phone call. If I wasn't able to link up with someone during the Sunday, I can make a phone call and talk to someone that I haven't talked to for a long period of time. I know that many Christians would even consider it legalistic to ask the question, is it lawful to do this or is it lawful to do that on the Sabbath? And they think that they're all so spiritual for that. But one thing is certain. Not only does everyone answer the question, is it lawful for him or herself in one way or another, but what we do, and what we do not do on this day tells you a great deal about your relationship that you have with Jesus Christ. Christ's command and desire at the same time is this: abide in me. Now you've come to Jesus Christ. You have professed faith in Jesus Christ. You are the people of God by virtue of the fact that you claim to have a relationship with Christ. Now Christ says, you've come to me, abide in me. Does this day give evidence of the fact that you have a heartfelt desire to to cultivate your union with your Savior in what you do with it. I could say a lot of things, and I know that some of these things would probably not sit well with you. You might even be offended. I could ask you, for example, why is it? I really would like you to answer this question for me. I would like you to tell me, why is it that we oftentimes, almost habitually, come too late for worship services? What does it mean? What does it say? I know that you do not have to answer now, but since I've said this, you have to sell this to God. You have to sell to God an answer that does not only make sense, that argues the case, but is true. Why is it that I come too late for worship almost every Sunday? And so that I'm ready to sit down when the sermon begins, because I do want to hear the sermon. I want to hear what the pastor has to say, but I don't care so much, not enough for that matter, not enough to sing praises to Him. First of all, I cannot sing. I don't want people to hear me. And I, frankly, I don't like the music. It's not my favorite. So I cut that out. I just don't come. I try to time my appearance in such a way that I come in time for the sermon, but I don't pray with God's people. I don't sing praises to God. Do you love God? Then put all of this aside. Then show your love. Bring a little sacrifice. Sing songs that are maybe played too slowly. Sing songs that you may not like. Sing songs that you may not even fully understand, but you understand enough to know that they speak of Jesus Christ, whom you profess to love. And if you do this, if you love God and therefore worship Him, if you do this, then there is also the love of your brother and sister, which is the flip side of your worship of God. And I do maintain that at least in this part of the world, where many, I'm not saying all, but many people do not have to work, not yet. In this part of the world, there ought to be time for both. God comes first, yes. The worship of God comes first. But you must also ask the question, is there a need that I can address here with God's people? He will surely be pleased with it. And I aim to please my God. So there is the worship of the living God. And either we do believe that in worshiping we will be blessed, or we don't. Or perhaps we think that it is too costly, or it is too difficult a burden to bear, or perhaps it is both. But His blessing is and remains on those who give up self in order to be ruled and taught and led by Him, in order to have rest in Him. So again, there is the worship of the living God who made this day, who gave us this day, not the seventh day, but the first day of the week. He gave us this day so that we can bless Him in order to be blessed in doing so. Do you concentrate your being on keeping Him in sight, in front of you all the day? I know that perhaps you're dying to hear from me whether it's okay to do this or to do that on Sundays. I think it's a waste of time. It's a waste of time for me to stand here and to tell you what is lawful and what is not lawful. Now, there are many things that are lawful to do on this day. If you want to go to a restaurant, go to a restaurant. If you want to turn on your TV set, turn on your TV set. But answer this question: what is it that you should be doing? And whether or not you do it, Now that depends on your relationship with Jesus Christ. That depends on how much you love Him. It depends on how much you believe He has forgiven you. That depends on how mature you are. That depends on whether or not you abide in Him. There are many things that are lawful to do on Sundays, and I think it is wonderful that God does not give us case law to tell us, do this and don't do that. There are many things that are lawful to do on Sundays, but there are only a few things, very few things that are truly expedient, truly beneficial, and that also for yourself, for your own soul, if it is your desire to abide in Him, so that He may abide in you. And if that is your desire, then you do not need to answer this question to anyone or for anyone. Is it lawful? But do you love the Christ? Let's pray. Our Father in heaven, we thank You that